This is Careers in Podcasting and New Media with Douglas E. Welch. For more information, visit our website, welchwrite.com/CIP. That's WELCHWRITE.com/CIP. Douglas Welch makes a presentation to the Orange County Podcasters, ocpodcasters.com.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. For those of you who don't know me, I am Douglas Welch. I like to describe myself as a pioneer podcaster, at least in this particular realm of podcasting. I started September 24th, 2004. And in fact, I'm actually rerunning those shows right now, which is kind of odd to listen to them. I'd like to find out a little bit about you folks, because I know some of you, and I either through your podcast or through other people talking about you. It looks like someone's arriving. Why don't we very quickly just give me your shows and what they're about real quick here.
My name is Megan. I do a show called Podcast Junkie where I review podcasts.
Right. Okay.
I do a podcast called Baseball History Podcast. I'll let you guess what this is.
Baseball history, right?
Yay!
See, gosh, I'm smart as a whip.
Jason, history podcast minus the baseball.
Just history. All history?
Yep.
Okay. In the back?
Cellular Heroes, movie reviews, or other movie-related topics that occurred to me at the time.
Okay. Oh, really? You're that guy. That's always made me wonder. And?
Craig Bassett, formerly.
You're not actually actively doing it anymore?
Podcasting has been.
Podcasting has been. I like that. Can we? Let's talk. Podcasting has been. Your podcast.
My podcast.
I'm learning a little bit about people. So
which one?
Either any of them.
Curbside Investigator. Okay. Barnett's podcast.
And.
Tucker Tales podcast.
And Geek Fit, right? Podcast. Yes. Great. I just wanted to ask just to kind of review. Some of you I know. Some of you I don't. The one thing I want. I have a few things to blaze through, and then basically. We'll kind of do question and answer, because if you've ever been to my website at welchwrite.com, you'll notice that I'm like some of you folks where I have about 10 different podcasts depending on what I'm doing at any one point. Over the last year, I've started delving into podcasting itself and, more importantly, new media. The fact is, I use that term nowadays. I don't know if you guys have started using the term at all, but new media to me is the term that gets used. I was a little worried up front that people wouldn't know if I said new media. You know, and then not podcasting what we're talking about. And the fact is, people seem to. The other thing is, new media to me is not just podcasting. Podcasting is a part of it, but it also encompasses video services like Seismic, like YouTube, like Blip TV, like all these other video services that are out there. And another step that I believe it encompasses is social networking. YouTube, all those sites have social networks built in as part of them. As a podcaster, you have probably developed social networks around your show in some ways. You have listener lines, you have mailing lists, you have in-groups, whatever. So we've already kind of stepped into that ourselves, even if we haven't actually realized it. So I try to figure out how to roll that whole ball of wax into one thing called new media. Now, something I've been doing in the last 10 weeks, I've been teaching a class with my wife at the UCLA Extension called Podcasting for Writers. And now it's going to be called Podcasting for Writers and Podcasting and New Media for Writers. I realize now after we've done it once, it's like, I need to change that name too. And one of the things I discovered there was people who are interested in podcasting and new media are actually pretty darn savvy. I've been really surprised. If people took our class, I thought I was going to have to kind of handhold them through getting their website up and running and getting a blog up and running. And mainly it's been teaching them how to record and edit has really been the big technical issue with them. They seem to have everything else underneath. And so that's been real heartening for me, because I know I don't have to go so far back in the technical pool and bring people up with me. They're already kind of at a certain level. One of the things I really believe today, and I think the Writers Guild strike is a big sign of the times, we are on the very edge. We are on the cusp of something really, really great. And I say this after 4 years. I'm in my fourth year of podcasting. And I have actually found myself underestimating the speed at which things are going to happen. things have been happening much sooner than I ever would have predicted. I'm trying to be conservative and say, yes, well, in 4 years there will be a song that's, you know, broken via internet media, whatever. And the fact is, we saw that a couple years ago. We've seen chart-topping hits in Britain based strictly on their internet exposure with no radio play at all, no PR program or anything else. So what the Writers Guild is running into right now is they're finally waking up. My wife is a television writer. She's a member of the Writers Guild. She's an emeritus member right now. She's not an active member. But I have had these ongoing discussions slash battles, depending on who you ask, with her about traditional media versus new media. And the fact is, reading articles and editorials in the LA Times and online, the writers are finally going, wait a minute, you mean I can, like, do this myself? I can not just write a spec script and go out and beg from studio to studio to studio to have someone make it. And the point is, I have to always look at them and go, yeah, and it's been that way for 3 years. Where have you been? Now, I try not to say it in that way, but that's really what we're experiencing. And in these negotiations with the studios, they're going, why is the history of entertainment trapped in the hands of 6 to 8 studios in Hollywood that control basically the entire entertainment business, especially with the consolidation we've seen over the last year or two with Viacom and NBC and everything else? It's in fewer and fewer hands. Back when the printing press was invented, they said the power of the press belongs to the person that owns the press. Okay? Well, the truth is, we all own the press today. And the traditional media folks are just starting to figure this out. And for you and I, that is a great, great thing for a variety of reasons. One, we are starting to see an establishment of podcast parity. And what I mean by that is, you set up an Apple TV, you go to the Apple Store and look at the Apple TV, and you look at the main menu, it's TV, movies, music, podcast. It's on the top menu with everything else, and that's only going to get more and more common. You see the Juiced online internet TV service, some people have seen that. They're in talks to get that software built into cable boxes and set-top boxes so that people can decide, I want to watch a satellite, I want to watch Juice, I want to watch podcast, what do you want to watch? It's not going to matter. I would say, and I'm going to be really conservative, save another 3 years, people aren't going to care where their entertainment comes from. All they're going to care is they get it. All they care is when they bring up that TiVo-style menu that has all their time-shifted content, they're going to go, oh, typical Mac user. Okay, let's watch that. GeekFit, hey, let's listen to that. They're really not going to get it. At least that's what I believe. You're going to have people, though, and we're already seeing, and we've seen it since the beginning of podcasts, where they've taken traditional media ideas, advertising, sponsorship, other things, and they tried to apply them to this new media world with varying results, as we've seen. I am not yet convinced that advertising is necessarily the best fit for new media. I think there's a role for it. I think there's a place for it in there, but I have not yet seen how it's going to all fit together. And I think that scares some people who have kind of bet the farm on that. They're seeing in their own eyes, geez, this isn't really, how can I do these deals and stuff like that? Now, some of the stuff I'm talking about tonight, I've written about in the past on my Careers in Podcasting and New Media blog. And I started that, maybe just 4 or 5 months ago, because I realized I was starting to write more and more and more about new media, and it didn't really belong in my kind of catch-all blog anymore. And so as I started to roll it out, I started to come up with some various things, and one of the ideas I was thinking of with the advertising especially is what we really need today. You've seen all these podcast networks jump up during the beginning of podcasting, some which still survive, some which don't. I've been members of a couple of them. I've actually made some money through a couple of them. But what I think we really need, instead of networks, is we need an open advertising market. Frankly, I wish I was this person. I wish I was a better coder so I could actually code this thing. But I think what we need instead is we need an open ad market. We need a system. Let's use the technology to benefit us, right? Why are we still doing things by hand? Let's use the technology to benefit us. Why don't we come up with an open ad market where each of our shows can have some universally agreed upon demographics of, you know, this, that, this many listeners, this type, whatever. That gets loaded into a system. So an advertiser, any advertiser, from mom and pop at the neighborhood cup up the street to Jiffy Lube at the other end of the street up here, could go in there and say, I want to do an ad buy. And these are the demographics I'm looking for. This is how many impressions I'm looking for. And have a system like that match up advertisers with the individual shows.
Jason, you don't think they've done that
Yeah, you're the coder, right? You can do that. Can you have that? Can you have that by next month? Yeah. I mean, it's a big problem. I mean, it's funny, but it is a big problem. But imagine if all of us didn't have to go out and try to find advertisers, try to find sponsors, try to do all that on our own. If we had a system where we could load in, and so someone like PepsiCo, the ad buyer at PepsiCo could go in and say, this is what I want. And the system would thereby go out and say, okay, I can get you 10,000 impressions on GeekFit. I can get you 25 on iProng, 100,000 on iProng. I can get you, you know, X number over here, X number over here, and do an ad buy and merely report that to us. Now, the other side of that system that I really like, that has been one of the things I really hate about podcast networks, typically under a podcast network, you have no control over what ads run on your show. Now, frankly, that's a deal breaker for me. I can't deal with that because the network's business is to get advertising, but my business is to run my show so they have some place to put the advertising. If they put an ad on my show that cuts my listenership by half, we both lose. And yet, every network you go to will say, no, it's a deal breaker. You have to accept the ads we give you. Where the system like this, how many people use FeedBurner? Are you any of you in the RSS feed ads in FeedBurner? That's the best model I've seen. They send me an email that says, there's an ad scheduled for release in your feed. Go check it out. Approve it or decline it. You go in, you see the artwork, you see how the ad works, you see the size of the ad, and you get approve or decline. In an automated system, that would simply be reported back to the ad and think, well, I can't give you those impressions over there, so we have to rematch you with some other place that will give you those impressions over here. But I think, for us, that is the single... That is one of the single most important features for you and I. We have to be able to say no. Now, for whatever reason, I've gotten emails and stuff from my listeners, and I have been complimented on my Christian podcast. Now, I don't necessarily go out there with a Christian message or anything like that, but I know, because of those notes, if I do something that is just horribly opposed to that, I'm going to lose listeners because I know I have a base of listeners like that. So I'm very, very concerned with what advertising goes in my podcast. On another side, even with FeedBurner, you know what? I don't advertise for credit card companies. Don't believe in it. I think they're basically putting people way too far in debt. That's my own personal feeling, but I get the choice, right? I get the choice to say yes or no. Verizon wanted to put an ad in the FeedBurner feed the other day, and I said, are you kidding me? decline. That's the type of control. And in my mind, that's the best example I have of how one of these ad matching systems would work. And yes?
What you're describing sounds an awful lot like what Blueberry does.
They're getting very close.
They allow you total control of what ads you run in your show. They go out and find the ads. You put what you want in or not.
And I think they've learned something since the time when I was in Tech Podcast Network. Because that was an issue with the Tech Podcast Network that I experienced. And I think a lot of the same people are involved in Blueberry.
Yeah, they aggregate the demographics, mm-hmm. and then they go out and use those for their marketing.
And what I would like to see something like that expand. Because I think we could all benefit from that.
I'm sure they'd
like to see that. Exactly. But it's a hard technical problem, but I think it's something that needs to be talked about. Mm-hmm. And needs to be discussed because it's something that's very important for all of us. Whether we want to monetize or not, and by the way, I'll get to this a little later, it doesn't matter. Podcasting is all about freedom. You guys can do whatever you want. You can make money, you cannot make money, you can try to make money, you make a little money, it doesn't matter. And don't let anybody tell you that it does. That's another topic coming up soon. One of the interesting things, this ties in with the advertising thing too, is I've also been involved in things where a company I was using decided one day they woke up and I got an email in my inbox that says, you're going to run this ad with these stipulations and this live read. And I wasn't the only one to say this, but I wrote back and said, no, because we have no agreement in place to handle anything like this. And face it, podcasters, unlike television shows and radio shows, don't need the advertiser. In almost all of the cases, everyone in this room, show will go on. We'll do our shows because we're doing it because we want to do the show. Yeah, it's nice to have money, but you know what? We don't need the advertisers. And I put that in quotes because while it would be nice, we don't actually. It doesn't mean the existence or non-existence of our show. With an ad system like this, everybody gets the benefit of that. everybody gets the benefit of saying, we don't need you. Let's partner, let's work together. And I think we're starting to see the same results with the traditional media industry. Again, going back to the Writers Guild strike, I think traditional media people, creative people, are finally going, oh, okay, they used to be a monopoly because they had a monopoly on the distribution. That's where everything got tied up. You could create anything you wanted, but if you had no way to distribute, no way to get it out to your audience, what did it matter? Well, the fact is, that's broken. The distribution stranglehold is gone, has been gone for 3 years now. We're just now starting to see more traditional media people wake up and go, oh, guess what? I don't need a studio anymore. Why are we having 6 studios control all the media? What I would love to see is 6,000 studios. I mean, it's a return, in an odd way, it's a return back to the old days. It's a return, my wife came up with the idea, it's a return to vaudeville. If you had an act, you got up there and went to the agent and went to the show, went to the theater manager and did your act, and you got hired or you didn't. And if you got hired, you went from city to city and did your act, right? No one, well, there was some judgment there. No one really stopped you from doing it. You could distribute your own act. We're going back to that today. And what I would like to see, not everybody wants to be a producer. One of the columns I wrote for my blog is, I'm not a podcaster, I'm a producer. And the fact is, I believe that now. I have come around to that mentality over the last year and a half or so, because I see a lot of wasted talent out there that I want to share with the world. And I realize now how producers in the old days kind of worked. They would see someone, they would see an actor, they would see a musician, they would see someone with extreme talent and go, the world needs to see this. And I have several friends that I am just struggling to bring into the new media world because I think people will just absolutely love them. I have a friend who's just voted Vegan Chef of the Year in the U.S. I have another friend who's actually a known personality from television who would like to get her stuff under her own control again instead of, you know, selling it to the Food Network or whatever. And in L.A. and in California in general, there's so much wasted talent. All of us out there, I'm sure, know someone that we like, oh, man, I just need to sit you down. How about, you don't have to do anything. You just have to come in and talk with me for a half hour once a week. And then you produce the show. I've actually started producing a show for a friend of mine called Mortgages Made Simple. We just produced our 30th episode. We do it remotely. He's in Brea. I'm up in the valley in Van Nuys. We make a Skype call. We do a tape sync. He sends it to me. I edit together. I act as his co-host. I call myself the Ed McMahon. I'm the dumb guy. Well, geez, Rick, APR, what does that mean? And, you know, arms, what's the matter with arms, you know, and all this stuff. And it's a wonderful little show, gives away information for free that people need, and it's basically an advertisement for himself and his company. He's a mortgage broker. We all need to begin to understand, I think podcasters understand this more than others, but we also need to go to all the traditional media people we know and just kind of keep nudging them and saying, no, we could do something together. We could put something together. Now, as I said, not everyone wants to be a producer, and that's fine. But what I hope will come about is instead of having 6 companies running the entertainment in the country, we have 6,000 companies running. We get back to the old days of Chaplin and Cecil B. DeMille and everybody else, where there was 100 different production companies in Hollywood churning out movies, not just 6. And I hope that you can see that we are on the cusp of that really, really happening. Kind of tied into all that. As we've seen over the last 3 years, lots and lots of people have come into podcasting saying, where's the money? I need money up front. Where's the money up front? And in every one of those cases, it's taken me a while to figure out what I wanted to tell them, but the fact is, the first thing I tell them is, attention comes first, then comes money. If you don't have people's attention today, the money will not come. It is a reversal of, again, the traditional media we've seen over the last years. There's the old story that, you know, the guy walks into the producer's office and says, I got a great idea for a movie. Okay, monkeys fly out of my butt. And the producer says, okay, here's a check for $1 million, go make it. Well, the fact is, if that ever did occur, if people actually ever sold a concept, which, yes, on occasion someone could sell a concept, you know, a one line, a one paragraph thing, it's very, very rare. Much rarer than you would ever believe in the stories told in Hollywood, because frankly, they're all trying to tell each other stories to make themselves feel better when they're out struggling and getting told no everywhere. Today, especially, people want to see completed proposals. They want to see completed episodes in some cases. Well, guess what we've all been doing? We've gone out and produced our demo reel. We've gone out and produced our portfolio already. We have something real and tangible that we can go to people with and say, this is what I'm talking about. Because the fact is, and I, network executives are wonderful people, I'm sure, but the stories you hear about them tend to be true, okay? And sometimes they lack a little vision sometimes. But if you can show them something, you're much more inclined to start interesting traditional media people in what you're doing. There is somewhat of a stigma attached to new media, even today, especially in the traditional media folks, my wife being one of them. You know, they kind of turn their nose up at it a little bit. And that's gonna go away as we see more and more of these deals. How many people have heard of Quarter Life? Quarter Life is an online TV show. It's by Hershkovitz and Zwick, who were the creators and producers of 30-something. There's like three big shows from the 90s that they did. They produced a show called Quarter Life, and it was released exclusively first through MySpace television. Okay, MySpace, producing TV? What's up with that? Okay, big change, right? Then it was released on their own website. It had a video blogging kind of part of the storyline in it. Well, what happened is, was it after 2 or 3 weeks, NBC basically just bought it. Said, okay, fine, we get it. We're going to buy it. We'll show it as a TV series. Thanks, move on. Now, granted, this is two big producers who already have a name in Hollywood. They already had money to do it. But it doesn't dismiss the issue that it got done, and it's starting to get done, and it's starting to happen more and more. Take it heart in something like Quarter Life, which is moving forward, which, by the way, another little side story about Quarter Life, because, we're talking about the Writers Guild, the Director Guild's coming up for negotiations and everything. Quarter Life actually had an agreement with SAG, called the SAG Internet Agreement, covering all the actors, paying into the pension funds, paying into the health care, just like a normal television show. Okay? It can happen. We need to make it happen, but it can happen. In the coming year, there's a couple things that I think we really need to do. Some of them I've already touched on, so I'll kind of skip over that. One of the first things we need to do is get on TV. Now, I know what you're thinking. I'm not talking about getting on a television network or on NBC or CBS. I'm talking about physically getting on the box. Okay, the Apple TV was one of the first forays into this market, and frankly, I need to see about 100 more of those types of boxes out there. Because we need to get our shows, audio or video or whatever, on the box that everyone already has in their home and everyone already knows how to use. Well, the fact is, with HDTVs so popular nowadays, computers plug in. There's a VGA port on, I think, nearly every HDTV manufactured today. Okay. High-res quality. There's no reason why you couldn't or wouldn't plug a computer into your television set. But we need to push that, and we need to push manufacturers to develop boxes that allow people to do that. It's like Juice trying to get into the cable box. They see it already. Everyone says, well, people aren't going to watch shows on computer. Well, the fact is people do watch shows on computer all the time. People like to dismiss it, but the fact is it happens every day. I have BBC shows on this computer right now that I sit down and watch with my family. Now, the fact is I can now also put those on my TV. And before that, I was copying into my iPod and using my iPod to play them on my TV. I don't have an Apple TV, obviously. That's where it's at. People have the box sitting on the table in their home already, and your stuff should be on it. And that's something I really, and myself, am pushing a lot this year, is to talking with manufacturers that are producing. I just ran across a new one called the M-Mix or something like that. It's a Linux-based one. It's not as pretty as the Apple TV, but it's wireless, fully functional. You can add a hard drive to it and all this stuff. So they're out there. Philips is supposed to produce a similar thing to the Apple TV, again, to bring that content right to your TV. And I personally think that is the way to go. Whether it's audio or video, getting it on the box that everybody knows how to use is imperative. We also, because we all live in the Southern California area, we're all infected a little bit, some of us more than others, with the big score mentality. We're all thinking about, I got to make $1.5 million. I got to sell a movie. This is my wife speaking. Quote unquote, my first movie needs to sell for $1.5 million. Okay? And the fact is, not going to happen. Your average person, she's worked in the industry almost 20 years now. It's not going to happen. It's going to be a lot of small scores, a lot of multiplying deals where you're selling it to television, to radio, to online, to all these other places. The thing is, too, you have a much larger market than traditional media ever had. TV show airs here in America. It might air eventually in Europe and Asia, but the fact is, It's nationally stuck. The BBC, it drives me nuts that I can't get the BBC here besides BBC America, which only has a fraction of what really is great about the BBC. Your shows are global. I have listeners, as far as I can tell, I have listeners on every continent in the world, including Antarctica. And I know that because I actually sent CDs to meet a supply ship going to a scientific expedition that wanted a radio station in Antarctica, and I sent them my CDs. So that, if you'd have told me that 4 years ago, I'd have been, oh, that, you can't do that. Come on. I get letters from China, Japan, Australia, Europe, India. I'm seeing a lot of listeners in India nowadays, which is interesting because it's a career podcast that I do, the main one. And I'm seeing more and more Indian listeners coming in. It's kind of like, oh, that's interesting because the world is changing over there as far as it's becoming actually not as cheap as it once was. And so they're having some issues with that. Something that I have seen happen again and again and again over every podcast expo, over every thread in the podcasters mailing list, every time you get podcasters together, you have this fight between professional and amateur. But frankly, I think it's bull. Because it doesn't matter anymore. Okay? Let's again go back to history. Some of the biggest scientific discoveries of the 1700s, gravity, oxygen, steam engines, they were developed by amateurs. Okay? They were natural philosophers who developed these concepts, who discovered these concepts and plants. Lots of science in that period was done by, quote unquote, amateur scientists. Well, guess what, folks? We're amateurs too, to some regard. Frankly, I believe in Paul Colligan's rule. If you made a buck in podcasting, you're a professional, really. What I think is more important is it has no meaning any longer. In the era when a YouTube video can get 1.5 million viewers produced on someone's webcam, okay, in a bathroom in Paducah, what's it mean? There's no difference between professional and amateur anymore. That guy signs up for their new ad program, which, by the way, got released to pretty much everybody now on YouTube. You can make some money with it. You can be a quote-unquote professional. The fact is it doesn't matter anymore. The terms have really lost meaning. They've reverted back to a previous time where, theoretically, if you were in the Scientific Academy, if you were in the London Academy, you were considered a professional. If you weren't, you were considered an amateur. Start thinking that way yourself. It doesn't matter. And anyone who tells you it matters, is doing it for, I think, one important reason. And that is to demean you. And that is to diminish you. That is to remove you from competition. Because people still deal from an era of scarcity. Every listener you get is a listener I don't get. Every viewer you get is a viewer I don't get. And the fact is, that doesn't play. We all have such niche markets associated around us. Even history podcasts. You could have two history podcasts. You know what? You're going to cover different issues. You're going to cover different events. You're going to cover different things. You're going to have different speakers. It really doesn't matter. But people will still think about scarcity in that way. And they often use it to try and basically push down the quote-unquote amateurs so that they get a little higher profile. And frankly, I think that's, in the world of business, it's certainly fair, but is it right? I don't know. And I think we need to understand that that's what's happening. It's not necessarily a philosophical argument. It is actually more of a monetary argument. As we have seen since the beginning of podcasting, we all need to be aware of carpetbaggers. That's what my term that I've used for them. Carpetbaggers are the guys that come along and say, I'll tell you what, I'll package your content, and I'll take 90% and I'll give you 10. No. Okay. Next important rule for the coming year, control your content at all costs. Sell out by all means, if you can. Frankly, if I could sell out, I would. But you know what? I'm going to sell it on my terms. The 90-10 deal, or the 85-15 deal we've seen in traditional media, in television and in movies and everything else, where the studio gets 85%, you get lucky if you get 15%, it's over. In fact, it's completely backwards. Creative people deserve to be compensated for any monies that their work gets, whether it's advertising, the advertisers sell, the network sell inside your program, whatever. Not only do they deserve a portion of it, they deserve the bulk of that. The traditional networks always said in the past that the reason they got the bulk of the money was they were putting up all the risk. They were putting up all the money, they had to build the big studio, they don't have to anymore. If we're coming to them with pretty much full-fledged beginning concepts of things and actual shows and stuff like that, what are they risking? All they're doing is putting it on a particular piece of airspace on their scarce airwave resource. Well, that's worth some money. Fine. It's not worth 90%. Why are they making that money if they're not doing the risk? You're the one putting up the risk. You're the one sitting there behind the microphone week after week and day after day, uttering into your phone about what you want to talk about. You're the one putting out all the effort and all the risk, and therefore you deserve to be compensated for that. And I think we all need to remember that. Sometimes we can get a little too involved with, I have to be a success. I have to get something out of this. And the fact is we need to be very circumspect about that and make sure that we're not selling the golden goose to somebody else who then gets all the eggs and gives us a tuppence at the end. Unfortunately, I've seen a lot of deals over the last three and a half years that basically fall into that realm where it's, you know, hey, guys, you know, we'll give you a little bit here and we'll take the bulk of it. And it's, you know, you just have to avoid that totally. Video is important. Now, this is funny coming from someone with a face like mine, but it is important. And the main, and I just have come to this realization myself. Video is important because as audio is more intimate than text, than the written word, and if you think about people walking around with the earbuds in their ears, you're whispering in their ears. You are literally whispering your message in their ears, or when they're running or jogging, whatever. Video takes it another step further. I have found that people have begun to connect with me more personally by responses in their emails and other things simply since I started videotaping myself. Even if I was, like, when Victor had me as a guest on his show, I recorded my end of the conversation, but I had both audios going into my feed. I streamed it out. I recorded it. The fact is, people could see my facial expressions. They could see my hand gestures. Even Victor commented about the faces I was making at him during the show when he went back and watched the tape later. The fact is, you know what, guys? It's intimate. And I never thought that way. I always thought, well, why do video if it's just you sitting there doing something? But you know what? There's an element that's missing that will allow you to connect people even more deeply than you already do. Even if you don't think you're a pretty boy or anything else, it's not about that. It's about people getting to know you at an even deeper level. And that's one reason I think Seismic is kind of catching on with the folks that are doing it. Seismic is kind of like, the best description is a video Twitter. And Twitter is great. I mean, we connect up a lot of people via Twitter, but I'm seeing already the fact you can see their face, you can see their facial expressions, you can hear their voice. We just transmit so much information through our bodies that we don't transmit through our words. Very, very important down the road. If you can find some way, and I'm not saying you do every change, you know, change your audio podcast into video. Find ways that you can integrate the video in. That, I think, is what's important. Finally, I gave a whole talk on this down at Barcamp San Diego, and I want to end on that tonight. And that is, for me, this is a year of visibility. Well, what does that mean? What it means is you can be the best podcaster, the best programmer, the best writer, the best actor, whatever. If people don't know that about you, it does absolutely no good. If you are not out there showing your abilities, showing your wares, showing your skills, you're missing something. And so this year, I have made it my point, this is going to be the year of visibility for me. I'm going to start uttering. I'm trying all the different tools out there. You're not going to use all these tools forever, but it's very important to go out and try them. Say, what can Seismic do for me? What can Utters do for me? What can video podcasting do for me? What can an enhanced podcast? What can SlideShare, which is that service that allows you to, like, sync audio to your PowerPoint slides, what can that do for me? Getting my message out there about me, this is what I can do. This is what I have to offer, even beyond what you've already been doing. Now, one interesting way that a podcaster has done this, Michael Dean, I talked to him a little bit. He's actually been successful in placing his podcast on public access. Now, this is something I had thought about years ago, but the minute I brought it up to anyone, they were all like, oh, please, public access. Right? Well, great. I mean, yes, the stuff on public access has never been known for its high production qualities. But the fact is, most podcasts today blow the production qualities of your average public access show out of the water. So if we got more podcasts on public access would suddenly become something worth doing. But someone has to be the first one to do it. If you have a public access channel in your cable system in your local area, go talk to them. Go do it. You know, even if you do an audio podcast, do a live show. Do a live video show, which is your podcast. One, you get a show out of it that you can use, you know, you can release in your feed. And two, you get some exposure. You get some visibility. Why wouldn't you do it? And that's the phrase I want to end on tonight, which is something I kept saying all throughout Expo last year. Why wouldn't you? If you could have your own radio station, your own television station, why wouldn't you? If you could have your own method of getting your message out to the people who really want to hear it, why wouldn't you? I just kept saying that to everyone. Well, why wouldn't you do this? Especially people who were there investigating podcasting for the first time, kind of figuring out what it was. I say this to people I am courting to try and get them podcasting so I can produce their podcast for them, whatever. Why wouldn't you? And that's a message you can take to everyone you know. Why wouldn't you? Especially if you have any concept of being a producer, producing podcasts for other people, making some money at it. Frankly, at my age, I'm getting tired of crawling underneath desks. That's what I do as a computer consultant. I crawl underneath the desk, I plug in the cable modem, I plug in the router, I do all this stuff. I don't want to do that anymore, okay? Or at least I want to do it less. Well, you know what? I'm starting to be able to do that. I'm starting to be able to teach other people how to podcast through my class at UCLA Extension and through personal consulting, and I'm actually starting to produce shows for other people. And that's something, that is an outlet where you guys could have to also make money to support your own podcasting efforts. So don't, if you have any inclination that way, again, not everybody wants to do that, but if you have any inclination of doing that, that's a great way of doing it. At that, I want to thank you very much for having me out tonight, and feel free to answer any questions you might have. Thank you. Any questions? Any comments? Any brickbats? Does anyone know what a brickbat is anymore? Well, people say I throw brickbats at you, but they don't really know what they are. I actually know what they are, because I grew up in a town with a tile yard. These little circular tile things, but anyway.
I think you bring up a great point in that being a producer is kind of a lost art. Maybe in the record industry, at one time, it was like, that was it.
Yeah, you were A&R, you were a producer, you sometimes did both. Definitely. And it's something I've had to come to. I never really thought that way. But the more friends, I mean, I live in Southern California, for God's sakes. I just meet people all the time. I'm just like, gosh, just come in for a half hour. I just need to get you on tape. I just need to get you on audio or something because you have something. We have friends who is an actress. She's appeared on West Wing and a lot of other commercials, national commercials and other stuff. She also does improv. And she has a little bit that she does with a friend of hers, which is basically two Orange County soccer moms sitting around discussing the news. And they've done it in live, and it's gotten really good results. And she said, "I could that be a video podcast?" I'm like, yeah. When do you want to do it? And you know, it, as a producer, I will tell you, there's a certain frustration. I realize the frustration of a producer now, is you see this talent, and it's like sometimes like pulling teeth to bring people into that role. But it'll happen. I mean, I finally talked to my friend Rick Gunzig enough, who does the Mortgages Made Simple, that he finally said, "You know what? That is a great idea. Let's do that." Especially right at this time in the mortgage industry. It's actually been a really great time to do it because everyone is panicked right now because the industry is in an uproar, as you all know. It's only going to get worse in come February, March, when all the adjustable rate mortgages that don't, if we don't figure out, well, even if we do have some sort of federal relief, that it's only going to cover a certain amount of people. There's going to be another scramble for that. So in that case, I think our timing is pretty good. That's a very businessy kind of related podcast. It doesn't have to be, but why not? Why wouldn't you? If he now has a pulpit to get his message out to people that he didn't have otherwise. So.
Do you work on them? Because I've got somebody I'm working on that is just completely fearful of technology. And I'm saying, it's okay, I'll set it up, I'll do everything. You just have to push the button and start talking.
Yeah. It's truly, you're doing the right things. You're making it as simple as possible for them. And frankly, if they can't do a double ender, say, screw it. Take them at Skype quality, darn it, and just be done with it. You know, just because Nike had it right. Just do it is the way to get things done. Sometimes you just have to do it. You just have to take that first step. And then once you do it, it's like a snowball. And it's like, okay, it starts to gather some momentum about it, and then all of a sudden you're going. I mean, as I said, we're on our 30th show. And it's like, how do we get to 30 shows? God, it seems like yesterday we just started. But you do gain a certain momentum. It is really hard. A little bit like Sisyphus trying to get the rock to the top of the hill. Once you get it over, it really does work. But, boy, it can be a little tough. One group that I work on, we have a lot of friends who work for nonprofits, charities. Our friend is the CEO of the Venice Family Clinic. And she's one of these people I'm working on. And with her, it's more of she's just too darn busy. But every time I have an opportunity, I try not to oversell, but every time I have the opportunity, I say, oh, you're doing this little panel discussion? Why don't we record that? I actually did. That's how I got my entree into the UCLA Extension. My wife has been teaching for them for a while, and we pitched this podcasting class, and that's how it got accepted. This podcasting for writers, and the head of the department had to meet me, basically make sure I didn't have a third eye in the middle of my forehead. So we met over lunch, and we got talking about podcasting. Funny enough, right? And she says, "Oh, you know, we do this publication reading every year, and we've always meant to record it, and we, you know, and now we're doing this website redesign. We could really use the audio." And it's like, yeah. So I'm hearing these words. I'm going, "I'll tell you what. Let me send you a quote for that. I'll come in. I'll record it. I'll edit up. You know, how many readers you got? 18. I'll edit up 18 individual podcasts, little intro, little outro, and they're reading. They can attach it to their teacher bio. You can put it on the website. Release it over 18 weeks. 18 weeks. That's like a third of a year. I mean, come on. You've got to, and release it every other week, and you got 2/3 of a year. Yeah, we could do that." And you know what? I sold it. And I will say this. People often ask me, what do you charge? And for my computer consulting, I charge $100 an hour. I've been doing it for 20 years. I think I'm worth $100 an hour. When I started doing the podcasting stuff, without any other guidance of what I should charge, I said, well, I want to get my hourly rate. I mean, that's, you know, I want to make as much money doing that as I'm making doing this. And figured I'll let them squeal in pain, and we'll figure something out. Well, you know what? I spec'd it out for 7 hours, and they went, sure. And then I went, I underpriced myself. Because, you know, if they don't squeal in pain, you've underpriced yourself, right? You know that whole negotiation thing, right? That was a big surprise, honestly. I was really surprised that they actually went for that. I'm pleasantly surprised. But, you know, ask for what you want and be willing to negotiate. But it's certainly people, if you can convince them of the need, if you can show them what it can do for them. I mean, for me, with nonprofits, it seems such a no-brainer. Because with nonprofits, their whole goal is outreach. Their whole goal is reaching out, telling people what they do, and getting donations. So you would think that podcasting would just be a natural fit. Because again, as I said, it's much more intimate. You can tell them a much clearer story, a much more detailed story. You can actually bring in people you've helped to help you tell that story. And frankly, I think, you know, a lot of nonprofits need to be reaching out to the next level, the next generation, if you will, of donors. We'll face it. The next generation of donors don't even look at a paper newsletter. They don't look at a paper request. You know how I know that? Because I don't look at a paper request. I get lots of charitable contribution things, and they just don't even open them. Just thunk. That doesn't talk to me. And the fact is, people these days want to be more involved with their charitable work. Seems a little bit like an oxymoron, people kind of being more isolated themselves, but the fact is, a person donating today wants to get involved. They want to know more. They want to know where their money's going. They want to know what programs are being done. They don't just want to sign a check and send it in and feel good about it. And I think that's a big change in the donor behavior over the last several generations. It's moved farther and further away from that, well, I give $1 million and I get my name on the building. People want to be involved. They want to see regular progress. And I think it comes out of the fact we live in a very connected world these days. If I'm giving money to rebuild a theater in Columbia, Missouri, guess what? I want a webcam in the theater. I want a webcam in the theater so anytime I want, I can go look and see what's going on. And I can see what progress they made. And I can watch a time lapse of the progress over the last week. This is something I actually pitched to a PR company that is in Columbia, Missouri. We were there filming. My wife was a writer in residence for a film workshop this summer, and I was actually there teaching on new media and podcasting. And that, to me, is what donors want to see. Well, the way to do that is we have the tools. We have the audio and video tools. The fact is, we can do today for free, pretty much, once you buy the computer. With this laptop right here, I can go to Ustream and go online live video right now to hundreds of people for nothing. You know, 5 years ago, it was $100,000, $150,000. That, to me, just is amazing. And I want to see people make as much use of that as I can. I started actually Ustreaming my twice-monthly classes that I give at the library for free. It's one of my volunteer projects. And it actually ended up being, that's the content for one of my blogs and podcasts, Technology IQ. People can actually come in the chat room. They can ask me questions if they can't be there live. But I have a live crowd, so I'm never trying to fill. And so it actually works out pretty well. And that actually caused the creation of that new blog. Yes, I finally had something that would regularly go in there. But okay, here's a home for all my technology information. So the other thing, too, is integrate podcasting into your life. I see a lot of people who say, oh, I want to do a podcast on blah. But whatever they're doing it on is such a narrow part of their life that they have trouble coming up with content for it. They're struggling, constantly struggling. people ask me, so how do you do all these shows? How do you do all these, you know, six podcasts? And well, the fact is, not all the podcasts are not weekly. They're kind of when I feel like doing them. But the other thing is, all the podcasts and all the blogs are a home for some aspect of my life. I like gardening. I do gardening. I have a gardening blog. I have a gardening podcast. I talk about what I'm doing in the garden, in my gardening podcast. Oh, look, the first paperwhite has opened up. Okay, there's a blog post. Okay? Again, it's not like I'm doing anything separate, anything special, anything different. I'm just capturing what I'm doing in my life and making that online material. Same thing for my word. I saw a guy, dumped a load of plywood in the road the other day, and I uttered about it, and I took a camera picture of it because, it drives me nuts. You see it all the time. Couches in the middle of the 5 freeway out here that suddenly get splintered into a million pieces, and you're like, tie down your damn load. So that's a bit of a rant, and I don't do those. I have never really done those. Utters is making it real easy to do the rants. But you know what? I would have ranted anyway, even to myself in the car. And the fact of putting it out there gets people to know me, a little bit more, a little bit better.
I'm even using those types of technologies that are generating the content for me and building it into some type of file, audio or video file, and then incorporating that into the show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a small little snippet of my life that will give people that come and listen to my show because they were interested in what I was doing while I was walking or what I was doing while I was running or whatever that, during my...
It goes back to the visibility idea. Mm-hmm. The fact is you're making yourself visible to a whole nother audience, a whole different group of people through Utters or through Seismic or through anything. That's interesting. That brings up an interesting topic. When I started podcasting, it was easy for me to start podcasting right away in that year because I've been writing my print column of career opportunities for like 8 years at that time. And I actually toyed with the idea of having an audio version of it. Oh, I'm ringing in my own talk. I'm ringing. Recognize that theme song? I figured that the podcast would just be a different way for the existing readers to consume the podcast, to consume the material. They could listen to the car, they could listen on their bike, whatever. There are readers and there are listeners, and there's almost no overlap. So basically what I did is I expanded my listener, my audience, 1,000 times by podcasting it, because it was an entirely different audience.
I'm trying to get him to podcast the... Give us a voice version of the magazine.
Yeah.
The iPrime magazine.
I think, well...
That is exactly right. I told him that last week. I won't read it. I might scan through the articles and read one or two that, strike my fancy. But if you podcast it, it'll show up on my iPod, and I'm not going to hit skip. I'll tell the whole thing.
I mean, and the way I describe it is, we've believed in different learning types for decades now. Mm-hmm. Kinesthetic, oral, visual, whatever. I think there's one more. I keep forgetting it. My son is kinesthetic. That's why this is in my mind right now. He has to do his spelling words. He has to spin around between each word when he gives me the words. It's a little crazy, but whatever works for him. So people will consume your stuff in different ways. There's another argument about professors like, well, I don't want to podcast my lectures. Then they don't have to come to class. You know what? If they get more from your lecture by listening to it as a bicycle across campus than they do sitting in a stuffy lecture hall, why not? The point is to convey the information. And someone like Bill, I can see, there is an added effort involved in doing that. Now, I mean, blogger, podcaster, Shelley and those guys, of course, they bring in external voices like myself. And I do that for free. You'll hear me on the Blogger, Podcaster magazine audio version. That's something I do. I do it for Adam. Adam asked me to do it. And so, yeah, I'll do it. That's fun. I like doing little things like that because... frankly, it's exposing me to a group of people I may not have been exposed to before. They hear my voice, I hear my URL, and it's just something different for me. And I have time to fit that into my, and the nice thing, the way that works is I have time to fit that in. Bill could do something like that. I don't recommend doing the whole thing, because frankly, some articles don't bear being read aloud. But definitely things that are, well, for example, I would say if you do an interview in the magazine, I would probably definitely record that interview and release it as a podcast. I think that is something whereby people are going to consume interviews in different ways. Some people will enjoy reading them, and some people just enjoy listening to them. And I think you'll find that there's not a big overlap in that Venn diagram. You'll have these listeners and the readers, and they really don't meet much in the middle. At least that's what I found.
Do you see the same thing with audio versus video?
I see the same thing as audio video.
Some video podcasts, I usually don't have time to watch them.
I have taken to listening to them.
Yeah.
And I don't
so
think...
Video, you can, like,
Callie Lewis.
Yeah, I live in Callie.
You can sit there and just listen to it.
Right, exactly. And I think that's important to remind people. I think video podcasters might actually do themselves a service by reminding their viewers that. You know, listen to me in the car. It's okay. You're not going to miss very much. You know, you'll miss some of the visuals, but you'll still hear, you'll get the gist of the stories. I mean, there are certain TED Talks I can listen to because they're not using any visuals. It's the person walking around on the stage. Why? I don't need to watch it. You know, granted, I might get something from the facial expressions. I might get something from their gestures. But in fact, I can still get 80% of the content from what they say. I have actually started subscribing to more and more video podcasts because there is less and less television I want to watch. It has gotten so bad that I actually went out to the iTunes podcast directory and said, God, find me something to watch, because there was nothing. There was nothing. I mean, I may watch Mythbusters. I may watch Dirty Jobs. Even those I don't watch. You know, I'm not religious about watching them. So I think that there's definitely... I think you will be finding more and more time to watch those sort of things, because I think you're going to be seeing the podcast parody. I think you're going to be... If we can get them on the box, I think we would watch them more. If we can get that TiVo-like experience where it's just sitting there waiting for us, that's, again, why I put a lot of importance on that, of getting on the TV, getting on the box, because I think if we got that, we would actually watch it more. I think we would actually sit down with a bowl of popcorn and watch a video podcast we really liked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had one, honestly. I'm actually going to write the manufacturer of this Linux-based one and see if I can get a demo, a review model of it based on the article I wrote about getting on the TV. I figure we'll try and work that a little bit, because I'm ready. Right now, I inherited a TV from my mother-in-law that has an S-video in, and I actually can connect it to this now, and so I can actually just go boink, and they show up on the TV. And so we started doing that. We actually watch... I'll admit it freely. I download Robin Hood and I download Doctor Who from the BBC. We do not get them here. We get them a year delayed. And so we actually started watching before they were even here. But those are two shows that we will sit down and make a point of watching. Bowl of popcorn and everything. And that is what I'm seeing. Yes, we may be on the cutting edge in that regard, but I do everything I can with your average non-podcasting person to show them how easy that is. In fact, an upcoming article is basically how to hook your computer, how to see podcasts on your TV, and discuss. You have an iPod? Guess what? You can put it on your TV. Like, easy. Okay? Just plug it in, and you go. Almost all of the TV sets have front AV ports now, and stuff like that. So it's really not that hard. And people are actually somewhat amazed when I explain that to them. Oh, I don't want to watch on the screen. Guess what? You don't have to. And I think all of us could benefit from doing that. Well, audio and video. I think look at how many people turn on the music channels on their cable systems, mm-hmm. and just have it playing. I was in a house working in a house the other night, and through the through the house sound system in this grand, I go to some big ass houses. I get these big houses. It was the holiday channel from their cable system. That's what they were listening to. Why not have your podcast? Why not have the other stuff that you like to listen to coming through there? Why not have Coverville coming through there? I mean. It doesn't matter. It's all just audio. It's all just video. There's no differentiation. If the quality is there, why not?
It's a good time for it with the writer's strike.
Yeah, frankly, I actually have offered up to the writers. I posted a public notice of it, and my wife talking with some people at the Writers Guild. She actually continues to work for the Written By magazine, their house organ, and so she has some connections there. I have offered up free podcasting seminars to all the writers and saying, yeah, you need to be doing this. But I've been preaching it to our writer friends and our actor friends we've known for years, but... Here's the point. Let me drive this home for you one more time, okay? There is a way to do this. You can either produce your own stuff, or you can find somebody. You have a friend who wants to produce. Okay, get them to produce it. Another thing I didn't talk in the overall talk was that big score issue. Everyone thinks million five. Well, the fact is, if you produce something for $1,000, which you can do today, you can produce something really nice for $1,000 today, you only have to make $1,000 to break even. Okay, it's like these people who make these movies for $1 million and then it makes $35 million. Well, they made a boatload of money, okay? We can do that too. There's no reason we can't. If we just stop thinking in that realm of you have to have $30 million to make a film. The fact is, people have already proven that you don't. We have to ingrain that thought. We have to get back to where we were, you know, years ago. It's sort of weird. It's, we're going forward with the technology but backwards with the concept. So it is a little confusing for some people. But I think we're going back to something that is really sustainable and I think healthier. Monopolies are never healthy. I mean, we've said that before with you know, Microsoft and everybody else. We recognize that monopolies are not healthy, but there's some still really big monopolies out there that really, and I'm not saying destroy them. I'm just saying there is a different way of doing it. Let's just start doing it a different way. Yeah, if you can get a writing gig on CSI, get a writing gig on CSI. Take the money. I'd take the money. But you know, I'd damn straight I'd be doing stuff on my own, you know, on the side, producing my own podcast or whatever. I mean, I'm still going to do that because that's something I'm doing for myself. You know, I'm not doing work for hire for them. I'm actually doing it myself. Any other questions? Well, thanks again, guys. It's been really fun. I'm glad I came down. It's always a pleasure for me to kind of talk about my ideas because I tend to come up with new ideas while I talk about them. So that's always great.
This has been Careers in Podcasting and New Media with Douglas E. Welch. For more information, visit the website welchwrite.com/CIP. That's WELCHWRITE.com/CIP. You can also call our listener line with your questions and comments. Call 818-804-5049. Again, that's 818-804-5049. This show is a production of WelchWrite.com, WELCHWRITE.com.